Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, April 16, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. I'm coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. I'm doing pretty okay. I had that cold. The cold took about a week and it pretty much gone. I still have residual congestion, but no contagion and my energy is back and all that kind of stuff. Ron took a full week to contract this for me. And I don't know if his body was fighting it off and it took that long or he caught it from someone else, but it's following the same pattern as mine. He felt a little off on Sunday. He felt a little more off on Monday. And then Tuesday morning, he realized, you know what? I do definitely have a cold. And by the end of the day, he felt like death warmed over. So this cold gives you death warmed over for a few days, unless for some reason you're Amy and it doesn't. Two of my staff have had it, and it's put them in bed for several days, and myself included, and not Amy. Who knows why? She takes very good care of her immune system and has high metabolism, drinks a lot of great herbal teas and takes supplements. And I mean, we do that too, but we just don't have her body. And people genetically, depending on where they are. So if you get this cold and you don't feel good, don't be hard on yourself. It's going around. It must be one that our bodies have not seen because it seems to be passed from person to person and spreads pretty easily. And it's definitely a cold. I mean, you can test yourself for COVID if you want to. I did, and it was not COVID. And it didn't behave like COVID either. It was not stealth like COVID. It was very obviously an obnoxious cold, and it followed the trajectory of a basic obnoxious cold. And, you know, where you felt, I always come to a point when I have a cold where I think that I'm never going to be well again. I feel so terrible. I don't know if I'm going to be well for that thing that's happening in a few days. And when I come to that point, invariably, 2 days later, I start to feel better. And the first thing that happened was I noticed that my malaise went away. I felt like doing stuff. And then over the next 2 days, gunk came out and felt a lot better. And now I've still got a little residual congestion and I'm okay. Ron, on the other hand, he's in the throes of death warmed over. So that was the trajectory it took. It took, I felt bad later Tuesday, all day Wednesday, and most of Thursday. And then, so he will probably feel a lot better on Friday. Anyway, if you get it, rest, drink plenty of fluids, take echinacea, take vitamin A, take vitamin C, drink honey, lemon, ginger tea. The most important thing really is to rest and drink fluids. Just not do anything. Don't push your body to do anything at all. Rest. If you can stay home from work, that's the best thing to do. And because if you expend any energy, it will take away from your immune system fighting this thing. And the more you let your body rest and fight this thing, the sooner you'll be out of it. And the problem is with a common cold, if you don't let yourself rest and fight it and drink your water and stay away from sugar and all that stuff, you're more likely to get a superimposed infection. So you're more likely to have that congestion hang around, and then you can get a bacterial bronchitis or bacterial pneumonia or bacterial sinusitis if that's your tendency. I don't think I'm going there because I am drinking the extra water, and I'm taking a little stuff to break up congestion. So I went to the Chinese grocery store today, which was very exciting. I was hoping for honey loquat lozenges, but they didn't have that. But they always sell this lovely combination of herbs, a syrup. It's honey loquat syrup with a whole bunch of other herbs in it, like fritillary, for example, and a little licorice and wild cherry and a bunch of other Chinese herbs that help with your immunity and your congestion. And they have that there all the time. They have two sizes and everything. So I checked them out, and they have all kinds of interesting things. It's always fun to go into the Asian grocery store because you can find all kinds of cool stuff. And it's not, and the Asian grocery store doesn't just sell Chinese stuff. So you can get things there like topicals, like salves, a few little over-the-counter Chinese medicine items, things for your immune system. And if you're not sure what they are, the gentleman that works there will tell you what they are, and that's fine. And he'll tell you what anything is. But the items that they sell there, some of them are Chinese, some of them are Vietnamese, some of them are Japanese, some of them are Korean. So they have a whole bunch of stuff. They even have ice cream there. Now, I didn't get the ice cream because I'm really not doing great with dairy, but they have really cool Asian flavors of ice cream. They have black sesame, red bean, green tea, my favorite. They do have mango, and the thing is I can get mango sorbet that has no dairy in it, so I get that from the regular grocery store. But boy, if I could eat dairy, I would get their ice cream. I would eat any of those flavors. I really think that I was probably some sort of Asian in a past life, probably Japanese, because I love Japanese cuisine. I love sushi and tempura, and I love stir fries and ginger and ginseng and all that stuff, that kind of light eating, that stir fry, the light vegetables with a little bit of protein in it, that my body really takes to that. It's very nice. Like the meat and potatoes thing, that does not work for me. The big salads, big stir fries, lots of steamed vegetables, roasted vegetables with a bit of protein, whether animal or vegetable. Like I said, I think what suits me the best is that PGAN diet. Thank you, Mark Hyman. And I haven't embarked directly on the PGAN diet. Probably will wait until April to do that. It is April. But after we are done with all the wedding proceedings and stuff for our stepson, my stepson Ron's son is getting married. So after that's all done, I may in earnest start following the PGAN diet and see how that works for me. I'm expecting it to work very nicely because it's basically how that's best for me to eat. Some animal protein, lots of fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, clean protein, high quality carbs like sweet potatoes and winter squash and cassava and things like quinoa. He recommends black rice over brown rice, but basically you limit your grains to pseudo grains, buckwheat, quinoa, amaranth, and black rice, which is not a pseudo grain, that's a grain, and oats, which is also a grain, and that's the only grains that you eat, and you try to stay away from flour, and we'll see how my body likes that. I'm sure it will, and you can eat beans too. So that's not exactly paleo. PGAN is paleo vegan. Because Mark Hyman found that paleo people and vegan people were eating basically the same diet, except the paleo people were also eating animal protein, except that in the PGAN diet, he does allow some beans, and people who eat paleo don't eat beans. So they don't believe in eating legumes, because legumes, they're concerned about the anti-nutrients that they have, oxalates and saponins and things that block the absorption of minerals, which is why when you eat beans, you're supposed to soak them. When you eat nuts and seeds, you're supposed to soak them. It helps to get some of the anti-nutrients out. If you eat, and the other way to do it is just don't overdo nuts and seeds. Don't make that the main part of your diet. Have a little bit as a garnish and have other things that don't have anti-nutrients in it as part of your diet. All right. So poor Ron is downstairs recovering from, trying to take care of himself. He didn't sleep well last night. And poor thing, I think he's doing a neck support, which tilts his head backwards. And he had a lot of trouble sleeping. And I looked at him and that's why you can't sleep, because your neck is tilted back. All your secretions are going backwards. And he barked at me, of course. And I'm like, okay, whatever. But here's the thing. If you are a back sleeper and you have a cold or you have allergies, tilting your head back is not going to be good for you, because you're going to drain all that congestion, is going to drain out the back of your nose, and it's going to go down your throat, and you're going to be coughing all night because you're going to get this congestion hitting the back of your throat. So you want to be tilted upward, tilted forward a little bit. I mean, even if you don't have to be sitting up, but you want your pillows to have you propped a little bit forward. But he insisted that it would hurt his neck, and what can I do? So now he's downstairs sleeping and on the couch, and his head is tilted up. So I had this conversation with my counselor, who is also my hairdresser, and I joke with Heidi about how she those counseling credits that she took when she went to cosmetology school, that they really come in handy. And so we laugh about that because, you know, you tell your if you have a good, I really feel like your hairstylist is somebody you want to be able to talk to. And, you know, you rap about your life when you go there. And she tells you about hers and you tell you about her, yours. And that's what's going on. And so we were all like, men. So anyway. So we're hanging in there. When I finally make a show after the wedding, we'll tell you how the wedding went and what it was like to go to Chicago and all that kind of stuff. So that'll be exciting. I haven't been to Chicago. I don't think that I stopped in Chicago when I was driving back from Oregon, but I did stop in Chicago on the way out to Oregon in 1991. So that's the last time I spent any time in Chicago. So now I'm going to spend the longest time in Chicago that I ever have, aside from, you know, I've been in the airport, both of the airports, the Midway and in O'Hare, but have not spent much time in Chicago. Those nice 2 days in August of 1991 were the longest time I spent there. So this is going to be longer because I'm going to go from a Thursday to a Sunday. So it'll be interesting to see what the Chicago deal is like. Take photos and see what happens. All right, so let's go. We're on a roll about menopause and weight. And the big deal about menopause and weight is you shouldn't worry about it so much. Because I know women are like, but I've got this gut. I'm like, I know you've got the gut. You know, it's not as important as you being happy and healthy. Here's ways of losing weight through menopause. Again, I am not going to say to my menopausal patients that you must lose lots of weight because your body is fighting against that, you know. And so you only want to do so much to promote that. So it occurs before and during because of a drop in your estrogen levels. And that drop in it's not just estrogen, it's also progesterone and testosterone, all of which push hormone-sensitive lipase. And when you don't have those around, you don't get the boost from the hormone-sensitive lipase. So it's harder to burn fat. And it affects your sleep. When you have menopause, it affects your sleep. And you have age-related reductions in metabolism and your muscle tone. Those can also contribute to weight gain. It's more challenging to lose weight. And the thing is, if you're having a lot of trouble with it, the best thing to do is to not try so hard. Because what is the worst thing for weight at any size, at any health level? I'm going to tell you, it's stress. Stress is the number one thing that maintains weight gain. And it's very simple. It's not esoteric at all. It's that cortisol, when you have elevated cortisol, cortisol's job is to run around your body, breaking down tissue, putting so it can put sugar into your blood so you can run away from the bear or do whatever it is you want to do. And if you're chronically stressed, you have chronically elevated cortisol, it's going to wind up elevating your blood sugar. And when you have excess blood sugar, and you can't use it all, your body's going to store that extra, it's going to turn that extra sugar into fat. And fat that is created from excess blood sugar is stored on your abdomen. So what menopausal women complain about is they have menobelly, that they have extra fat around their belly. They lose their hourglass shape and they gain a more of an apple shape, which is your classic menopausal shape. And it's also your classic blood sugar dysregulation shape. So anyway, you know, you have that drop in your estrogen levels, which contributes to your weight gain. And estrogen gives you your physical sex characteristics, regulates your menstrual cycle, which we no longer have, maintains your bone health, and helps your cholesterol levels. And so you have a dip in your estrogen levels. You don't have so much estrogen running around in your blood. You still have estrogen in your tissues, in your fat, and in your organs, but not so much in your tissues. So there is a natural aging process. You tend to become less physically active, and at the same time you're less physically active, your metabolism slows down and your sleep isn't so great. So how do you combat this? Getting regular exercise is helpful. So getting regular exercise may help you sit at a lower weight, and it may not, but it will definitely help you feel better. There's so many reasons to exercise, and not all of them are fat loss. You will have, because when you, So maintaining bone density and maintaining muscle mass is a move it or lose it phenomenon. When you tell your muscles that, hey, I want to use you, they'll say, okay, and they'll make more muscle cells. So it will take your protein and you will not just, your muscles won't, they don't just get bigger by swelling, they get bigger by adding cells. And that's what you want to do. The more muscle cells you have, the higher your metabolism is going to be, because muscles are very metabolically active. So the more muscle mass you have, while I'm sitting here talking to you, I'm going to burn more fat than if I didn't have good muscle mass. So, you know, that's why I do my yoga and I do weight training a couple times a week and I get on my bike. So I'm wearing this cool shirt. I know you can't see it if you're just listening to audio, but I have a, it looks like an infinity with an anchor, and it says Cape Cod. It's a very cute shirt and I really like it because it's very simple. And it almost looks, it looks sort of like an anchor with an infinity, but it also looks like an abstract bicycle. It's kind of cool. So that was a really cool shirt. And it's in one of my favorite colors to wear, aside from pink, which is things in the aqua and teal and sea green family. Not so much straight up green or lime green, but green with a lot of blue in it. And so this is a very peaceful color. It reminds me of being at the beach. Anyway, so having muscle mass is very important. If you get exercise, you're going to maintain and build that muscle mass. There are studies that show that people of any age can build muscle mass. You take 80, 90 something people and have them do weight training and they will build muscle. So if you eat protein and you get exercise, you will build muscle mass. So, and you can do it with little light weights. It doesn't have to be a big deal. You can do body weight exercises and you will build muscle mass. So aerobic exercise can decrease body fat after menopause as well. And resistance training, if you do resistance training at least three times a week, it can improve your lean body mass and reduce your body fat. So you may not lose weight, but you'll change your body composition, which is actually more important than losing numbers on the scale. So the physical activity guidelines for Americans recommends that people should aim for at least 150 minutes of aerobic activity every week and muscle strengthening activities on two or more days each week. And it doesn't have to be for a long time. If you're doing very high intensity muscle training, it can be 10 to 15 minutes. If it's not so high intensity, I would say 20 to 30 minutes. And that's all. I mean, when you're doing a weight training routine, it doesn't have to be an hour and a half. 20 to 30 minutes of moderate activity, body weight and or, you know, weight training where you use machines or you use actual handheld weights. That's plenty. That's fine, and you will absolutely build muscle mass from doing that. And you know, when I do my resistance training, I do about 15 minutes worth where I actually am using hand weights, and 15 minutes worth. The rest are body weight and core exercises. And I have some core exercises I do with a great big exercise ball, and I have some that I do that I do a couple of sets of planks, and you know, I do bridges and I do some oval crunches on the ball, and I do some leg lifts on the ball, and I do push-ups, and I do wall leg lifts, and none of those include weights. Those are non-weight activities, and then I do a bunch of things with weights as well. So, and that's, I only do like maybe 10-15 minutes with the actual weights, and everything else is body weight. So, and I think that helps to maintain a good deal of strength for me. And aside from that, I also do yoga. So I have 2 days a week of weight training and then depending on the week, at least 1 day a week of yoga that has resistance in it. Almost every day I do even a very short practice of yin and restorative yoga where that's just lying on the floor and stretching and breathing. So I need that for my sanity. And also when you do that kind of yoga, it lowers cortisol. Deep breathing lowers cortisol. The fastest way to lower cortisol is to do deep breathing. If you engage in regular practices of stillness, if you engage in deep breathing, it lowers your cortisol. That can help you lose weight. So don't think that the only thing you can do to lose weight is to starve yourself and get exercise. It is just as important to rest, to get good quality sleep, and to spend some time doing restorative activities. And so, and you'll come to crave, as much as you crave chocolate or sweets, or I was at the hairstylist and she got her delivery of Girl Scout cookies. So as much as you crave those things, you will come to crave restorative activity. Things like yin yoga, qigong, restorative yoga, meditation, and just sitting and reading a paper book, just sitting in your yard, listening to the birds. You might get yourself in a position where you're very comfortable, at where you can sit and just be comfortable and relaxed and let your body heal. That is just as important as getting exercise and eating the right way. And it's probably more important. People who are less stressed are going to tend to sit at a lower weight, depending on what else they do. So if a person's not already active, it's easier to increase your activity levels gradually. And activity can be what the best exercise for you is the one you'll do. So yard work, like gardening, walking your dog, park farther away from the building entrance, take the stairs instead of the elevator, stand up when you take a phone call, going for a walk or getting another type of exercise. If you have a job where you sit a lot at a computer, if it's nice out during your lunch break, get a walk in. And there's some evidence that if you do a light exercise after eating, you will tend to sit at a lower weight. So light exercise doesn't mean, okay, so you eat your lunch and then you go for a really hard bike ride. Not at all. It means go for a constitutional, where you go for a stroll after you eat. So in the summertime, you might want to take advantage, have your dinner a little on the earlier side, and then go for a walk after you eat dinner. And you'll tend to burn off some of the calorie, raise your metabolism a bit after you eat. And that, again, that does not mean hard exercise. That means like a gentle walk where you go look at the birds, you walk around your yard, you walk around your neighborhood, depending on what kind of neighborhood you have. So eating foods that are high in nutrition, this should not be a surprise to you that it will help you to sit at a lower weight if you eat more nutrient-dense foods. Why? Because it makes it so that your body is more efficient. This is not rocket science, really. So you need to consume somewhat less calories, but it's not as much less calories as you want to change the quality of the food that you're eating. So you want to eat healthful, nutrient-dense foods that have a variety of colorful fruits and vegetables, whole grains if you tolerate them, and healthy, clean sources of protein. The Mediterranean diet is very popular and it's very effective. There was a study in 2016 that reported that the diet can improve heart disease and risk factors, can lower your blood pressure, your blood cholesterol, and result in some weight loss. So you eat a variety of fruits and vegetables, clean, lean protein from beans, fish, chicken. You can even eat lean grass-fed mammal protein. So if you want to eat, or wild caught is fine too. If you eat venison or if you eat grass-fed beef, that's fine too, if you tolerate it. Whole grains and breads and cereal. And I would say to limit those, that's the thing you want to eat the least of. Healthful fats from olive oil or avocados and legumes. And I'm noticing here in this list, I don't see dairy. That's interesting. They don't say yes or no. It just doesn't mention dairy, and we'll get to that in a minute. So you want to avoid processed foods that have a lot of trans or saturated fat. Well, saturated fat, not necessarily. Saturated fat just has a lot of calories. Saturated fat has been shown not to be the devil that they thought it was. It will raise your cholesterol if you are a cholesterol hyperproducer, but it doesn't cause free radical damage, so it doesn't tend to damage your arteries or the rest of your organs. Whereas if you eat heated seed oils, those have free radicals in them and trans fat, so they're going to tend to cause oxidative damage, make you more likely to have atherosclerosis, because when you have the oxidative damage to your arteries, your body has to then go and repair those arteries, and it will put down calcium, cholesterol, and platelets, and that's how you get your atherosclerotic plaques. So you don't want to eat foods with a lot of added oils and sugar. Remember that combination of fat and starch, or fat and sugar. What's the most popular fat and starch combination? Anybody? Bueller? Pizza, right? What about the most common favorite fat and sugar combination? Okay, Bueller? Yeah, ice cream. All right. So people, and that's why you can eat, if you eat a salad, you're lucky if you get through 200 calories of salad, even if it has oil on it, because the fiber and the water are so filling that you get satiated very easily. On the other hand, if you eat ice cream, you get your quart of high premium ice cream. Before you know it, you're through the quart and you're through a day's worth of calories. And the reason you can do that is your friend Neuropeptide Y. Neuropeptide Y, it takes away your satiety. It makes it feel, makes you feel like you're not hungry. Because what do you want after you have one piece of pizza? Another piece of pizza. What do you want after you have half the container of the premium ice cream? The other half of the container. So what are you going to do? So finding alternatives to that is a good idea. And when you eat very reinforcing foods, foods that the food industry has created a bliss point for you, that's where you just keep eating and eating and eating because you're all blissed out. They want you to do that because you're going to finish the food and then you go buy more and then they make money. So bliss point foods are not going to be helpful for you. One of the things that's happening right now is people are taking semaglutide and tirzepatide. They're taking these drugs that stifle your appetite, and it's actually put a dent in the snack industry. So people are buying less cereal. People are buying less chips and popcorn and, you know, snack foods. That, like, the snack food industry is actually suffering right now because so many people are on these weight loss drugs. Isn't that amazing? And so they're trying to find other ways to get you to buy these things, things that are more, I don't know if they're trying to get things that are more helpful, but they're trying to find other ways to get you to crave these things because people are just not buying them. And it's about time, really. But your processed foods would be things like white bread, pastries, cakes, cookies, donuts. And there are ways to make like muffins, for example, that are very healthy. Like I made muffins from oats. The what was in the muffins was basically oats and flax and no flour, oats and flax and dried fruit, and that was mostly it. And that's something to hold it together, maybe an egg. And you don't have to use the egg. You can use pretend eggs, like use flax eggs, which, and then the flax eggs are, the ratio is 1 tablespoon of ground flax seeds to 3 tablespoons of water. That's one egg. And you let it sit in the fridge for a couple of hours. And it, what comes out is this goop. And then, so however many eggs your recipe calls for, you do that many tablespoons of flax and that many tablespoons of water. And then you get your flax eggs and you add them to your recipe and they'll still be like moist and chewy. And then you'll have extra fiber, which is great. So watch your sweetened drinks too. Sodas, juices, and those great big drinks you get from your favorite cafes that have all kinds of sweet stuff in them. So sugar-sweetened beverages, you're drinking your calories before you even know it. Get a nutritionist. A nutritionist. So the thing is, a naturopathic physician, people come in and they talk to me about nutrition, but the reality is the time that a naturopathic physician spends, we basically have to be physicians. So we have to talk to you about what's going on with your health, your lab results, your general health in all over. And we, unless we make a special appointment for it, we don't really have time to sit and talk to you about what your plate looks like. Some naturopathic physicians probably do that, but there are great nutritionists who can do that. They sit down with you and they talk to you about what your plate should look like. So if you're going to do a PGAN diet, someone will sit down with you and say, okay, here's the PGAN diet. Here's how Mark Hyman developed it. And here's what you eat when you eat the PGAN diet. Here's some recipes. Here's some pictures. Here's a plate for you. This is what you might eat for breakfast. This is what you might eat for lunch. This is what you might eat for supper. And how do you like to cook? Do you not like to cook? How can we make this easier for you? Do you need easier recipes? Do you need to buy stuff? Do you need a meal plan? And I tell people, look, so many people come in and they're like, I don't cook. Then what do you eat? Well, they eat prepared food. And if you eat prepared food, you're not going to be as likely to eat healthy fruits and vegetables. So I try to encourage people, if that's where you're at, find better takeout. You know, find takeout places that make salads and stir fries and soups that are full of good veggies and stuff like that. And the other thing is to think about getting a meal service, because you can get meal services for any kind of diet that you're on, whether it's low inflammatory, gluten-free, dairy-free. You know, you set all these parameters with your meal service, and they'll bring you whatever you want. You get the meals pre-made, and you can get the meals so that you have some prep. I think either way is good, because when you get handed the meals and you have a good, healthy meal, all you have to do is heat it up or defrost it, and off you go. And there's your meal, and you don't have to think about it. Then you start looking at it and going, you might start going, I can make that. Then if you have a meal service that gives you the ingredients, and here's the ingredients, all you have to do is this, this, and this, follow the instructions, then you build some confidence. And ultimately what it can lead to is you don't need the meal service anymore, because now you know how to make this thing and you might be likely to make it. That's why I have handouts for the no-brainer salad, the no-brainer stir fry. What I probably need is the no-brainer soup or stew. That would be helpful also. And, you know, we make it for people who eat dairy or don't eat dairy. And we make it for people who are vegetarian or vegan or not. And so you make it, you set it to the parameters that you like. All right. What else helps with fat loss? Sleep. Sleep. God bless Beth in heaven. My dear friend Beth, she said to me at one time, sleep can turn into anything. That was a sentence I will never forget that Beth said, and you should remember that too. And Beth said it. So sleep can turn into anything. What does that mean? That means if you don't get good sleep, you're not going to have proper rest, and you're not going to feel, you're not going to have the energy you need to do during the day. On the other hand, if you get good sleep, you're going to have the energy to do whatever it is you want to do, whether it's have a good day at work, whether it's get on your bicycle, whether it's go to a yoga class, whether it's clean a closet, whether it's hang out with your friends, whether it's sit in the yard. Everything is going to be more pleasurable and easier to do if you get good sleep. So you need to make sleep a priority. So we're not talking about just general rest. We're talking about actual sleep, sleeping at night. Getting high quality sleep is important for maintaining a healthful weight and overall health. And if you don't get good sleep, you can gain weight from that. Sleep disturbance is linked to aging processes and metabolic disruption during menopause. When you alter your sleep quality and your circadian rhythm, it can affect your appetite hormones. And again, I have to shout out to my colleague Jade for saying you need to get good sleep, because one of the things you're doing when you're sleeping is you're not thinking about how hungry you are. You're just sleeping. If you're awake, you're the hunter-gatherer in you is going to go, okay, if I'm going to be awake, I'm going to go start looking for food to power this energy that I need to do whatever it is I need to do. So if you get a normal amount of sleep, which is for an adult, for most people, is 7 to 9 hours, during those 7 to 9 hours, you're sleeping. You don't need energy. You don't need to eat food. If you wake up in the middle of the night, by all means, drink water. And people vary as to what they like to do about water, because they don't like to get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. My health requires that I stay hydrated. So I don't mind having to get up to use the bathroom. So I always keep water on my nightstand. I don't like cut my water consumption as it gets closer to bedtime. I just drink. And then if I have to get up to use the bathroom, I just do it. And most of the time I can get back to sleep. Not 100% of the time, but most of the time I do. And if I wake up very parched in the middle of the night, I will go in the other room and get more water, and I'll put electrolytes in it. And if I feel a little lightheaded, that's usually why, because I'm a little dehydrated. And if I'm to the point where I'm lightheaded, it's time for the electrolytes. This water that I'm drinking at the moment has a little bit of electrolytes in it, as I keep topping off the water glass, and depending how I'm feeling, I might or might not add more electrolytes. And I didn't this time. Sometimes I like to have it lower in electrolytes because I want to just have plain water. I don't want to lose my taste for plain water. And also, digestion-wise, the electrolytes tend to have citric acid in them. And most of the time that's fine, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes it can be a little irritating to my belly. So I like to have plain water. And if, you know, you've eaten during the day, and, you know, as we get older, our lower esophageal sphincter doesn't work as well. You're more likely to get heartburn. It's nice to have plain water to mitigate that. And so if you're having a little bit of reflux, of course you can take medicine for that. But the first medicine to take for reflux and heartburn is water. It dilutes the acid. It very simply, it lowers or raises the pH because you don't have the concentration of hydrogen ions that you do if you're not hydrating. But if you have acid reflux, one of the things to do is hydrate, because it dilutes the acid. The acid's not supposed to be in your esophagus. It's supposed to be in your stomach. You don't want it to be so dilute that you can't digest your food. But if you already have heartburn, you have acid that's somewhere it shouldn't be. And that's when you drink water. Water is the first thing you do. So if your sleep isn't good, you're going to have more appetite hormones because that primal part of you is going to tell you to start hunter-gathering for, vegetables and berries and nuts and seeds and protein. If you don't sleep well, you're going to have more body fat. Again, because it's stressful to try to function while you're tired. So if you feel stress trying to push yourself while you're tired, guess what happens? Cortisol goes up. What does cortisol do? Runs around your body, breaks down tissue, turns it into sugar. Sugar that you don't burn up turns into fat. That fat gets deposited on your belly. That's what happens. And you're not going to be able to expend as much energy if you're tired. Why? Because you're tired. Your body's telling you, I'm too tired. I don't want to do stuff. So you feel more energetic if you get good sleep. So figuring out whatever's going on for sleep. I had a patient come in not too long ago. I've been helping this fella for many years. And I have a couple patients like this where we're monitoring their thyroid. The thyroid's not enough to take drugs, but we give them supplements to help their thyroid to function better. And I was worried because I have a couple patients where they fall asleep during the day. They have daytime sleepiness. So I said, that's it. You're going to sleep medicine. So if you are trying a lot of things and you are having trouble, you're waking up unrefreshed every day, it's time to get sleep medicine. You go to the sleep medicine center. We have one at Wyndham Hospital here. Wherever you live, you've got a sleep medicine center nearby. And they talked about this on the Today Show the other day. The doctor said that one of the things you could do now is you can get a home sleep kit and you can order it online. If you can't get into see a doctor, you can order home sleep study kits online. I don't know about the insurance issue with that, but if you go to a pulmonologist who does sleep medicine, then you have insurance, your insurance is going to cover that. So I don't know how that works if you start out online. But you can get home sleep studies, and if the home sleep study shows something, then they might prescribe something for you. If they're not entirely sure, then they're going to be more likely to have you do an in-lab sleep study where you have to spend the night at the sleep center, at the hospital or wherever the sleep center is, and they do a sleep EEG. So they put a cap on you or they put electrodes on you and they see what's going on in your brain, if you have any abnormal electrical rhythms in your brain. And they measure your breathing. They measure oxygenation and how your oxygenation happens through the night. And do you have any episodes where you're not breathing? And that's called sleep apnea. The nasty thing about sleep apnea is that sleep apnea, if you have sleep apnea, it raises your risk of cardiovascular disease, heart attacks, and strokes. So it's very important to get that diagnosed. And then, unfortunately, what we have now is these things called CPAPs. Constant positive airway pressure. That's what CPAP stands for. And then there's BiPAP, which is bidirectional positive airway pressure, where it breathes in and out for you. CPAPs put oxygen into your body, but you breathe it out. And either you wear a mask or you wear nasal pillows to do that. And people don't want to get sleep studies because they're afraid they're going to get diagnosed with sleep apnea and they're going to have to do these CPAPs. And not everybody's thrilled with CPAPs. And now they have these devices that they can implant in your lung, I believe in your lung, and then you press a button and it helps you. If you stop breathing, it causes you to start breathing again. So, and there's no mask. And I think you have to have a certain kind of sleep apnea for that in order to be able to use that. But anyway, I had a patient come in who got diagnosed with sleep apnea, started using the CPAP, and he said, I love my CPAP because I sleep so much better. If sleep apnea is what's going on with you, don't don't rule out the CPAP situation because it could change your life. It could make you feel so much better. And just because, remember, if you're sleeping, again, you have to get all through all your stages. The problem with sleep apnea is you tend to fall asleep and you stop breathing suddenly and you wake up during stage one sleep. And to get all of the health benefits of sleep, you need to go through your stage one, stage two, and stage three very deep sleep and your REM. And if you miss any of those stages, you're going to be tired. You're not going to feel as healthful. And if you don't get your REM sleep, REM is your brain detox. You need that to sort stuff out in your brain. And if you don't get your REM sleep, you're going to have psychiatric issues. You're going to have anxiety, depression, mood disorders if you don't get that. If you don't get your stage three sleep, that's your restorative sleep for your body. So that's where your muscles and your organs do most of their healing. So if you have sleep apnea, you're not going to get to that place. That's why I'm telling you, look, if you need a CPAP in order to help you stay asleep, it's worth doing because you're just going to be so much happier. It's so much better for your health if you get all of your stages of sleep. I know it's scary to think, oh goodness, I would have to have that CPAP. But if you have daytime sleepiness and you don't sleep well and you know every morning you wake up unrefreshed, it's worth getting a sleep study. And if one of your deals is you're overweight and you're at a weight you don't want to be at, poor sleep will make you heavier. That's just how it goes. Like I said, if you're not sleeping well, you're going to be tired. Your body is going to direct you then to go look for food to keep you awake because you can't do it on your own. So, all right. And so that's for menopausal weight gain. That's for weight gain for anybody who's listening. Overall, there hasn't been a lot of conducted research into whether alternative medicine helps with menopause. But I'm here to tell you that yoga certainly makes my menopause better. And whatever age you are, I think yoga makes your life better. But that's my opinion. And if you want to do a meditative practice, what's the best one for you?
The one you'll do.
But I really feel like any kind of practice that gets you into deep breathing is going to be helpful for you. And deep breathing is the fastest way to lower cortisol. So very important to do, whether it's just meditating, sitting in a chair and reading a paper book, sitting in a chair and looking at the birds, sitting in your yard and just enjoying nature, petting your dog, petting your cat, petting your lizard, whatever animal you happen to have. I had my friend Valerie, she posted the life of a gecko, and it was a real gecko. It wasn't the Geico gecko. It was just a cute little gecko, and the gecko was sitting licking some food. Maybe it was some honey or some juice or something. And it was so cute. And it was so pretty too. Anyway, so bonding with animals is stress reducing. Complementary therapies might be yoga. You could do hypnotherapy if that's helpful to you. There's lots of herbs that can be helpful. And we're going to talk about some supplements for fat loss at some point. And of course, meditation. So eating mindfully. So instead of eating in a way that you're just, eating without thinking about what you're eating, be mindful about what you're eating. So what you do is before you go to eat something, think about the food that you're eating. Really enjoy it, smell it, taste it, really enjoy it. And also think about, am I actually hungry? Do I really want this food? Or is what I really need rest? And a lot of times I think people overeat because they're tired. That is one of the main reasons. They're tired or they're bored. But I think it's more fatigue because we are so overworked and overscheduled in our culture. And so people tend to overeat for those reasons. And it's really, so if you can be mindful about what you're eating and think about, all right, do I really need this donut right now? Or I already had half a donut. Do I have to eat the whole donut? And my staff laughs at me because I'll offer them a treat. And they're like, no, I don't want the treat. I'll just eat the whole thing. I'm like, well, you don't have to eat the whole thing. You can take half of it home and have some later. Because I'm very disciplined about that. When I have a chocolate bar, it will take me, you know, a couple weeks to eat the chocolate bar in my drawer because I have a square or two, and I'm very good about that. I train, and I didn't used to be that way. I used to be more of a binger. And now I've come to the point, I'm very fortunate this way, and that the feeling of being overstuffed is a deterrent to me. I don't want to feel overstuffed. So I kind of try to practice harahachi bu. Harahachi bu is the Japanese idea of eating until you feel like you're about 80% full. Don't fill yourself up all the way. Know when you're satiated and stop eating. So I pay attention to that to the point where being overstuffed is uncomfortable to me. So I have a turnoff switch, which is great. I'm really grateful for that. I didn't used to have that as much. And if I eat, you know, if I eat salads, if I eat a lot of vegetables, if I eat a lot of high fiber stuff, that's very filling. I'm not going to want to eat much later. I also pay more attention to an extent to calories. I'll look at a bar or some chocolate, or I'll look at the calorie content of it and say, and I'll see that, okay, if I eat this whole protein bar, it's 220 calories. Do I want 220 calories from a protein bar? No, I don't. I'd rather spend more calories on other stuff. So I eat half the protein bar and then have an apple or have a healthy muffin or have some granola or something like that. Because I'd rather eat a variety of things than just have a whole protein bar. So think about what you're eating. Think about when you're about to eat, what do I want to eat? Instead of like taking a bag of chips and just sitting with the bag of chips, if you really want some chips, look at the bag of chips and see what's in it. See how many calories there is in a serving and decide how many calories you want to eat and then portion that out. And so when I have a bag of chips, like, and my favorite chips to eat, I like to eat cassava chips because I find that they're filling and I don't tend to want to eat a million of them. And it's very satisfying to have a small serving of the cassava chips because they have resistant starch in them. And so I will take the cassava chips and take a small container and put and fill the container halfway and put the bag away. And then I'm not sitting eating all of them. So if I sit and eat most of the bag, I'm going to be stuffed. I'm not going to enjoy my dinner. And I want to enjoy my dinner. So that's an example of eating mindfully. So eating mindfully means thinking about what you eat before you eat it. And also while you're eating it, really enjoy it. If you love the crunch and starchiness and salt of those cassava chips, savor every one and enjoy that, and then be done with it, and then do something else. So when you eat mindfully, that can lead to reduced food intake. Tracking. So tracking is good for some people, not for others. I am a tracker, and I don't mean Justin Hartley, which is a pretty good show, and you might want to look at it. But anyway, I'm a tracker in terms of I don't track people for money. I track my food and my exercise on an app. And there are lots of studies that show that meal tracking can help you with fat loss at any age. There's lots of apps you can use. Find one that you like that works for you. There's lots of them out there. You can go into your Apple Store or your Google Play and find various apps that work for you, and they will track meals for you. You have to input it. You input the meals and you input exercise that you have done. A lot of them will pair, like if you are a cyclist or a runner or a walker and you use another app to track those things, Map My Ride, Map My Run, Ride GPS, Strava, you can often pair those with a tracking app, and it will dump the exercise into the app, and then it'll tell you the calories that you burned during that exercise. So I have my app paired to Strava and iCardio and Ride with GPS and Training Peaks and a bunch of things, and it dumps it into the app. And if it doubles up, then I just delete it from the tracking app. So like Training Peaks and Strava will dump into my food app, and it'll be the same exercise. So I'll take one of them out. So anyway, tracking. When you track, it makes you more aware of what you're doing, and you can look at what you're doing. The other nice thing about tracking, one of the things that makes people crazy about losing weight is losing weight. So when you're paying attention to a scale, like Jade says, weight loss is neither linear, fair, nor predictable. You can do everything right this week and not lose weight. When you remember The Biggest Loser, that's what used to happen. So why not just not pay attention to that? Tracking is more interesting because you can look at what you ate today and be proud of it. It's like a record of your accomplishment. And you did that today and you can do that tomorrow. Whereas weight loss may or may not happen over the course of months or years. And waiting for that can make you nuts. That's where stress reduction comes in and accepting yourself how you are right now. And make sure you work on feeling good in your body right now. And I will guarantee you, if you eat a diet that works for you, that mostly it doesn't have refined sugar, refined products, chemicals, too much alcohol, too much processed food, and you do eat a diet that's full of whole foods, whatever version works for you, whether it's keto or paleo or Mediterranean or pegan or vegan or some version of vegetarian, but it's mostly whole foods. However you do it, if you do that consistently for at least 2 weeks, you're going to feel so much better after 2 weeks, even if you're still way over a weight that you consider acceptable for you. You're going to feel a lot better a lot sooner than the weight will come off. And feeling good is really what it's all about. It's very hard to lose weight when you're postmenopausal. Your body doesn't entirely want to do it. Part of why you're holding on to the weight is because you don't have the estrogen and progesterone like you used to have when you were younger, and you don't burn that hormone-sensitive lipase, and your body needs a way to keep some weight on, because if you carry around a little bit heavier weight on your body, you're going to maintain your bone density more, but you have to keep moving. So you're going to have better bone density if you have more body fat, because you have to carry the body fat around, and the body fat has estrogen in it, right? So again, I want to remind you that you're going to have more estrogen in your tissues than you are in your blood. So when your doctor measures your blood estrogen, you're not going to see your total estrogen status is. I think we already talked about controlling portion sizes, and that's where tracking can help you, because it's going to show you, okay, a piece of bread has this many calories, and you're kind of like, how do I want to spend my calories? If my calorie level is going to be around 1700 for the day, do I really want to spend 150 or 200 of it on a bar, or would I rather have, a high fiber muffin with some jam and some nut butter? So you can start to think about things like that. And when you do tracking, so when you have a tracking app, tracking apps often have crowd shared elements to them, that people have entered foods in them and you can use the foods that are already entered. If you look for a food and the food isn't there, some of the apps will let you scan the barcode of a processed food app, and it'll upload the nutrition information into the app. So that's a nice feature. And if someone has already eaten the food and you put in the name of the food will already be there. If you have eaten something and you can't, whatever you do, you can't find it in the app, you can add the food, and it'll have a way for you to add the name of the food, the brand of the food, and all the nutrition information, including calories, fat, protein, other nutrients. And so, and then the next time you ask for it, it'll already be entered. So the more you use the app, the more it remembers what you have eaten. And it becomes very quick and easy to load up your foods. So like I told you, measuring portion sizes, don't eat them out of the bag. Try not to eat in front of the TV, because the TV makes you zone out and makes you less mindful and not think about what you're eating. And opt for, when you eat out, eat less bread and appetizers. Don't fill up on the bread at the beginning of the, if you really love the bread and you go to a place and they have just awesome bread, choose how much bread you'd like to eat, eat that, and set the rest aside so you can enjoy your dinner. If you want, you can start by measuring stuff if you need to. Measuring stuff is what they used to tell you to do in Weight Watchers years ago. I don't know if they still do that because they use the points method. But when you use a scale, you're not going to have to use it forever, because you're going to learn you're going to learn to eyeball how much a certain food is. And then you're going to be like, all right, when I eat a portion of this, this is how much I want to eat. And you're not going to have to do it all the time. The other thing to do is plan your foods. So you're like, all right, this is what's going on for this day. I'm going to plan to eat this, this, and this during the day. And that way, if you know what you're going to eat, then you're going to be less likely to go off that plan. And also stock your house with healthful foods and don't stock it with foods that are not so good for you. Carry healthful snacks with you, like nuts, seeds, fruit, protein bars, stuff like that, jerky, meat sticks that are from healthful companies that don't use chemicals and nitrates. All right. Get support. Support from your family and friends. Get someone in on it who's also working on changing their health and working on their diet and stuff like that. And make great lifestyle changes. And you want to make healthy habits for the long term. And realize that it takes a while to make healthy habits. So don't feel like you have to get the healthy habit on board. If you fall off, it's okay. You can always get back on. You're always one meal away from eating really healthfully. So if you had a big old chocolate bar just now, don't worry. Wait until you're hungry again and then have something healthy. And don't beat yourself up around it. We have so much shame and stuff around food, and it's not necessary. And like I said, during menopause, it's harder to lose weight. But if you eat healthfully, you'll be more likely to sit a weight that you're happier with, and you will be happier. You will just be happier in your body. Your body will feel more comfortable if you're avoiding processed and packaged foods and too much sugar and too much junk, and you are eating good, healthy foods that you look forward to eating. And like I said, get the rest. Getting the rest is where it's at, because if you're eating and what you really need is to relax, it's better to relax and find yourself craving restorative activities like restorative yoga, like yin yoga, like qigong, or just sitting in your chair with a book, or just hanging out with your dog or cat, stuff like that. So it takes time to make those lifestyle changes. So that the lower estrogen and progesterone levels do cause an increase in body fat, but and the main thing is you're becoming more sensitive to cortisol. So, and the way to help you be less sensitive to cortisol is stress reduction. So, all right. So that's it for today. So I'm going to let you go with that thought. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days after recording. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores and WHUS.org.